Welcome to Conscious Compassion, hosted by Charles Gray
and Portia Flores. This podcast will share stories of the different ways that people deal with low moments in their lives.
How they manifest the drive to overcome obstacles and keep pushing forward. A fluid space with media, poetry, music, literary readings, or just plain storytelling.
Coupled with in-depth interviews of the storytellers so that listeners can learn, relate, and be inspired.
Spend a moment with us as we explore creative coping strategies for these chaotic times. Conscious Compassion,
where we share because we care.
Welcome to another episode of Conscious Compassion. I'm Charles Gray. And today we have the pleasure of speaking to a father and son, Joe and Jay McCarthy. They have a unique story, and I think it's going to be a really special episode for everyone because there's nothing like a familial relationship and all of the dynamics that go with it. And this one should be revelatory for just about everybody to understand that family is really what it comes down to, and being able to hold on to that with all the love in your heart is everything. So with that said, welcome, Joe. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, Jay, why don't you kick it off for us?
Right. So this is a good old-fashioned coming out story. So in the time between my freshman and sophomore year in high school, I had decided to become public about my newfound gender identity. And, you know, I just found the proper language for how I felt. But at this point in time, my dad was living in the Alexandria area. So my sister and I had gone down to visit him. And you know, naturally, this is something that definitely should be conversed about face to face. You know, it's worth more than just a phone call or a text. So I decided to come out on the side of a Starbucks cup like an adult. So,
oh my,
spectacular.
They asked for the name. I said Jay, and dad kind of gave me this look. It was just complete, hold on. Like, it was just shock. And following this conversation, we had taken a stroll down to the water and we sat down on this bench. And I guess that is when I spilled the beans, so to say. And we honestly have just moved on from there. You know, naturally, it's not an easy conversation to have between a parent and a child. And then also my sister was there too. So we didn't necessarily have the opportunity to kind of just be completely one-on-one for this conversation. But there have been plenty of cases of, you know, dead naming, which is, you know, an instance where you use the name that you were given instead of the one that you choose for yourself as who you are, and misgendering, which is when you use the wrong pronouns on somebody. And if, you know, naturally there were plenty cases of that, but that was to be expected in every single corner of my life. So naturally, you know, there's no ill intent, ill will there. It's completely natural and it's part of the transition from everybody's side of the story. You know, throughout that time, I had finished up high school, finished up college. We've seen each other for most of the holidays throughout the year, and every single one is just better and better because I feel as if almost in our time where it's mainly just phone calls or Zoom calls, that's the time that we use to understand each other more. And so by the time we talk again, it's more comfortable, it's more understanding, and it makes more sense because we each have our time to separately understand each other.
A little space to process.
Yes.
Yes, yes, I can understand that. So I have to back up a second. Was your sister in cahoots? Did she know what was going down?
Oh yes. Oh yes. She knew that was the day of reckoning.
It.
Yep.
Jay, I you didn't mention lunch, did you?
But oh yeah. Would you want to pick up on that one?
Well, no, I'll wait to see if either of them have any more questions for you. I mean,
Go.
Please.
Yes.
Well, so you know, it's It's a very interesting thing. And Charles, you know, I know that you would understand this completely. All the way back to when I went to music school, you know, I went to music school in the early 80s, which I know is hard to believe with my youthful presence, but
absolutely.
There it is.
Thanks, Charles. So I my first exposure to homosexuality actually was my roommate my freshman year, and I didn't even know. I didn't even know. It was something that was that I had never experienced before, you know, and as throughout my life in music, and my sister is actually married gay. And this was a very normal thing to me. And as Jay grew up before Jay, I actually thought that Jay was gay. And I actually had never experienced this whole transition process, and had been around hundreds of musicians and actors and just people in our business, and never thought twice about any of that. I never held any bias. I always considered everyone on equal ground. I knew that, you know, when Jay was younger, there was definitely, I guess the old term, which I hope is not an incorrect term, you know, if we were to use a term from when I was young, you know, if someone was a tomboy, or if someone had just, you know, tendencies more towards a male than a female. But I, you know, I'm an educated guy, and I had, Jay was absolutely correct. I mean, when Jay told me, I was like, wow, this was a, I knew, I mean, it's not like I didn't, I was oblivious, but this was new territory for me. And I think one of the things that did not help the situation was, you know, the reason that I was living in Alexandria was I was going through a divorce. And so I would see the kids, you know, when, you know, how we worked it around everyone's schedule. And Jay's older sister, Katie, definitely a very strong advocate for Jay. And that particular afternoon, after Jay had given me the news, so we went to lunch, and lunch turned out to be not so positive, because, you know, then we started getting into a conversation, and Jay, you know, maybe I was sort of being cornered for not knowing, you know, you should know this or you should know that, and how would you not know this? And actually we had a pretty in-depth discussion, which was actually quite loud in a restaurant where everyone was sitting around us, and it was probably would have been a good scene from a movie, because it got pretty interesting. But one of the things that I realized was, and I've been thinking about this a lot up to the point of this conversation, is in the beginning, I was terrified to admit that I didn't know. The more that I thought about it, and the more I realized that Jay is my child, regardless of any of this. But as a parent, especially when we were going through what we were going through, as parents separating during a time when our kids needed us so much, I felt an enormous amount of guilt. And in addition to the guilt, you sort of put your shield up a little bit, because, you know, you want to pretend that you know everything, which, you know, both Jay and Charles know that I really don't know much of anything. As time went on and our relationship started to, I guess, redevelop, you know, in this different stage of Jay's life, I told myself that I was going to do my very best to try and understand what I could understand, but I was going to surrender. And I was not going to try and pretend that I know everything, because I don't. And I believe, as a parent, I hope, the most important thing is for me to support Jay and Katie, and, you know, and of course everyone in our family, my wife and everyone else, and do my very best to do what I can, not only to make Jay feel comfortable, but to still try. This is the tricky part, you know, to still try and be a parent with what it is that I know I think I should do as a parent, in conjunction with what Jay is dealing with as a person who has gone through this And this is like a you know, an enormous thing. And that's been sort of a revelation, you know, to try and do my best, but to also understand all of the things that Jay's going through, and to be there in whatever facet that I need to be outside of what I would consider my role as a father.
Wow.
I think that was beautifully said. I really get where you're coming from, and from a few different angles. I'm not going to interject too much because I do want you all to talk, not just me. But I am going to say that from a person who has always been unapologetically gay, I never went through all that coming out stuff. I never went through any of that. I was just me from day one. And I figured everybody else had a problem. It wasn't mine. I'm just saying, you know, that's how grounded I am in being me. So consequently, it's kind of tragic and funny being married to a social worker that we constantly find ourselves having these conversations where I intentionally watched all of Pose as an exercise. Because I knew that all of a sudden I was grandpa. All of a sudden I went from being the guy who was really open-minded and super cool with everything to being somebody who was going, what? And I had to acknowledge first with myself that I just didn't get it. And the only way that I was going to be able to was to sit down with people and say, please educate me. Tell me how this works. Tell me what's going on. Because, you know, I thought I had the gay thing cornered. Okay. But it's gender identity and gay, just they can be in completely separate fields.
Yeah.
You know, and gender identity is something that I am consciously trying to learn about and understand, because it doesn't come naturally to me to just go, oh yeah, I get it, and jump in and just go with it. And I see that as, I don't want to use the word fault in myself, but I see it as something that I know that I need to work at.
And I think that we all do. And the other thing that was very pivotal to me that I finally realized was, you know, by the time Jay had spoken to me, this is something that probably had been going on the majority of Jay's life in trying to figure this out. And of course, Jay can clarify the truth. And when I would use the wrong terminology and never with intent and almost terrified at points to even say anything because I was so afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Correct.
I realized that, you know, Jay and not just Jay, all of the people that have gone through this have been thinking about this their whole lives, you know, and also in reference to Jay's sister, their generation they have sort of almost, and again, I'm not an expert, but, you know, they've been sort of at the base of the mountain with all of this stuff. So they're extremely familiar and also, you know, moderately ferocious if you don't get on board with this stuff.
You gotta be.
And man, I was at the back end of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's like a life of, you know, coming to terms and then, you know, speaking with your parents and then, of course, you know, we need a little time to figure this stuff out. But, you know, because of the fact that they have been thinking about it so long, maybe the time for us to make our transition, it's never going to be quite quick enough because, you know, they've been living this stuff. And I understand that. That would be, you know, like, and Jay's a musician too, you know, it's like, and Charles, you are, of course, you know, it's like, you know, us, you know, getting, you know, some music that we need to learn for something for by tomorrow. You know, and I've got a sub on a show tomorrow. And so here we go. Here's the music. Go make it happen. You know,
it's a lot of catching up to
that. And we can do that because that's in our wheelhouse, you know, but this was definitely outside of my wheelhouse. And yeah, it was wow.
But, you know, it's funny. The thing is, for both of you, I'm thinking, and please jump in and correct me always, I'm thinking from Jay's perspective, this is something that you are evolving through. You know, I mean, we can all look back on adolescence. We can all look back on our high school years and go, wow, how in the hell did I get through that? And look at the evolution of who we were at 12 versus who we were at 18 versus who we were at 25. How old are you, Jay? I don't even know.
I am 22.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right. Yay. Beautiful. Trust me, by the time you're 40, you'll be a whole nother person. I'm just saying, you know, when you think about what you've been through emotionally and discovering yourself from say 13 to 18, and then what you're going to continue to go through now, because everything's changing, everything's evolving. You're looking at everything from a different perspective and you're trying to figure it out. At the same time, the people who are dealing with you are trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the pressure is kind of on everybody to just constantly be open and willing to evolve.
Exactly. Definitely. It's kind of circling back to the statement you said about, you know, being very grounded in your queer identity. For me, kind of like my dad said earlier, I have never once in my life been a feminine presenting person. The only time that you could catch me in a dress was when they like stuffed me in one for like family pictures. And I did not look happy in a single one of those pictures. You can check. It's hilarious. But
okay. I can confirm.
Yeah.
You can confirm. I like that. Nice, but nice.
It was also, you know, obviously queerness was no, you know, foreign thing to me because, you know, my aunt is gay. And also queerness has been something that the conversation started for me in like middle school, because that's like when I got my first little like youth group girlfriend, go figure.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And it was something that I just didn't even, being trans, I didn't even realize that it was like a valid thing to be or to allow yourself to be. It was kind of like, you know, the joke that, not really a joke, I guess, but like people would always be like, oh, you're so gay, you're basically a boy. And, you know, that's what I had been hearing from, you know, romance, I suppose, first started being a thing in my life. I don't even know where I heard the first term for it. I think I was literally watching like a TV show, and it was the first time that I had been like presented with a valid, honest and pure representation of a trans person. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea that was allowed. Like, I thought that I was just gonna have to pretend to be gay, but I am just in fact male. And I didn't even realize that was like a choice. So when I did find out, I was just so excited. And I told everyone pretty much immediately in like my little theater group in high school. They were nothing but respectful, and all my little orchestra friends are nothing but respectful. But, you know, there were definitely some instances in high school where some people could have deserved like a very swift kick in the pants for the way that they treated me. But, you know, we don't have to talk about that yet.
Right.
You know, the educators that I were around, there were some that were just completely venomous. And for, you know, against a child struggling with something that they don't even understand quite yet, and have
right.
all these adults that don't even know them just breathing down their necks being like, no, we know there's just something wrong with you, or like you just want attention, or I don't know. But then there were the educators that just like nurtured me and gave me opportunities that normally like in an unsafe environment, I wouldn't have been able to pursue. And
right.
inherently then I wouldn't have been able to pursue this career that I have like as a theater artist. And it's just because I had, even if it was just the smallest one, I had that safe space where I was able to properly communicate and be heard out in a space where it wasn't just immediately, well, like, oh, well, like the questions about the body and the questions about, you know, hormone replacement therapy and, you know, just all the wrong, the most invasive questions, you know, and those are the last ones that you want to answer with anybody, even like your family and your friends. Like, that's just not something you want to talk about. And you would think that things would change when you get to the collegiate level, but in my university, after a season audition, I had a professor who I had to also, you know, be in class with, pull me aside and tell me that he didn't think perceivably I was a believable man. And he, you know, kind of in turn, generously offered me to audition me for a female part and then, quote, make it trans, end quote. So not only dismissing the identity that I had very, you know, I thought I had come to terms with at that point, but, you know, to hear an educator to say something like that can completely undo so many years of really reinforced, I guess, confidence in my identity. Mm-hmm. Especially when there's, you know, trans people are the butt end of the joke like a million times over, like even to this day. So it's just simply easier for, you know, something small and backhanded to just completely undo all the work. And yeah, the educational spaces are supposed to be for, like I said before, like nurturing and wanting to explore these identities. And like, thankfully, the latter half of my collegiate career, I was able to do that and get into more kind of like contemporary and devised work and just play with my gender, you know, just see what I could do with it and like what it really means to me. And so now, go figure, everything moves in full circle. I'm like trying to find a skirt I can wear because I am so confident in my masculinity that I think I would just look banging in a skirt. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
And I'll just,
you know, I, you know, as Jay's father and then also as someone who's in the music business, you know, the one thing that Jay did not touch upon was, and I remember this very clearly when this was happening with this one particular professor, and in just in my opinion, you know, and certainly as a parent and also as someone who's very involved in collegiate teaching, and you know, I've been teaching for a billion years and also on the collegiate level, I think that episode with that particular professor was, and I say this in all respect, and again, as a father, was actually a necessity for Jay, not only as a trans person, but also as someone who was about to enter the jaws of the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. And Charles, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When people are being, will always be judged, whether they're a performer, whether they're working backstage, whether they're a musician, musical director, producer. So I, as much as it broke my heart to see this happen, this young man not only turned around and continued to excel, but then just upon graduation this past year, had the highest GPA out of the whole program and also was awarded the highest honor by any of the theater students because of his success, not only as a performer, but through academics. And I can say this also as Jay's father, Jay almost didn't get out of high school.
Yeah.
Not because Jay wasn't smart, but Jay had decided that it wasn't time to, as we say, pour the gas on the fire.
Right.
And as soon as we arrived in college, all of a sudden we're getting straight A's and stuff. And I'm a little concerned at this point. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Right?
who is this imposter?
Well, but the imposter was actually who Jay really was, because now Jay was in the element that he needed to be. Now, I understand not a 100%, because some of the difficulties that had been sort of presented to Jay, but also at that time that was a challenge for Jay to embrace who he was as someone who had gone through all of this, and me being incredibly proud. And also, I'm a sort of like the quiet type of parent who does not, I'm not the helicopter. I'm like, so not a helicopter parent. I'm more like a moped parent or something like that. I made that up. That really wasn't very funny, which is why I'm a musician and not an actor. But I know how intelligent my kids are. I know that for a fact. And I knew that Jay was going to encounter a lot, and did, you know, even prior to leaving the house. But I knew that this young man had and has the goods to be comfortable, not only in his own skin, but to know that this is, it's just like us in the arts, you know, this is a little bit of an uphill battle, you know? And a lot of times we don't have answers to things. And as I had said at the beginning of our chat, you know, always wanting to always have the answer and to make things happen, you know, because that's what we do in our profession. But that's not the way the world turns. And so we have to understand that we could have long periods of happiness or long periods of the opposite. But we know that we have to continue moving forward in the skin that we're comfortable in, you know, and that's a very important thing. And that's a very challenging part of life, you know.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I just wanted to sort of interject that into.
No, thank you. Story. We hear a lot about people, especially now, it has almost become a catchphrase, but we hear a lot about people moving forward in their truth. And it sounds, sometimes it sounds a bit cliche, but the reality is that it is so on point. It is so much the truth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to resonate specifically in terms of one's gender or sexual preference or whatever, just spiritually living in one's truth. And it's what we tend to achieve, hopefully, as we get older, becoming more settled with ourselves, so that all those things that come at us from every direction, from others, start being kind of deflected and not come breaking through the armor and bringing us back. You know, you've worked so hard to get where you are. And as you were saying, Jay, yes, somebody can say something to you and it'll just really just rock all of that and send you back a bit. But you kind of eventually get to the point where if you are truly living in your truth and you're comfortable enough with yourself, you barely even hear it.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly. Just,
It just bounces and you keep moving. Because, I mean, I think part of what Joe was referencing is the reality of if you're in theater, people are always going to judge every aspect of you.
Yes.
You're going to be too short. You're going to be too tall. You're going to be too fat. Your skin's going to be too dark. You're this, you're that. It's always something. And, you know, I have to say the thing that has helped me personally in this field is finally getting to the point where I used to try to be that chameleon. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come in and remake myself for every role that I auditioned for. Mm-hmm. And I've stopped. Now I walk into a room and I go, this is me and this is what I have to offer.
Thank you.
Yes.
And
man, and it takes
do you want to work with that?
And you know what, Charles, I think a lot of the, you know, when you're younger and, you know, we're all looking for work and we're all looking to make our mark, that's just not something that we're going to consider. And we will show the weakness. And actually, the people that do show the weakness and the people that do show that they are going to give you exactly what they're giving you, regardless of what it is you may be looking for, those people always end up being successful.
Exactly. Always. Because they want that. It's that kind of personality that can stand on stage no matter what's going on around them. And people are transfixed by that person because they're just emanating this sense of truth.
Yep.
And that becomes the big appeal. So, you know, when in doubt, just be you.
Right.
Don't even worry about it. Every time I have thought, well, this is the end of this. I've phased out of something. Something else comes up. It never fails. Mm-hmm. And I will go too far with this one, but bear with me. It translates into relationships. Mm. And I'm just dropping this little pearl, and then I'm going to jump away from it as fast as I can. Every time I have found myself in a situation where I thought, wow, I got out of that one, but I guess I'm just going to have to be alone because that's all there's going to be. It doesn't seem to matter. Mm-hmm. I have had cancer. I have had all kinds of issues and things and situations throughout my time. And inevitably, the kindest, most open, most unbelievable souls have come to me when I felt the worst about myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When a door closes, a window opens.
And that it works in relationships. It works in my career. It works in just every situation. Like every time I think that, you know, that's it. This is it's awful. It can't possibly work out. It does. Mm-hmm. It just does. And the only thing that's been consistent is that I have remained true to myself and not tried to recreate it or hide it. You know, I don't bother to dye my hair. I don't do this. I don't do that. It's like, yes, I got a bald spot. And this is me.
Yep. That's right. And it's real.
It's just what it is.
That's the real artists. And if we just want to talk about people, mm-hmm. you know, those are the people that we want to be around. People that are genuine, they're sincere, and they're not always trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes because they just want to get the gig or they want to make a friend. It's like, just you got to do your thing.
Right.
Sometimes that's tough.
Right. Right. But it's hard, made harder when you're still trying to figure out who you are yourself. So kudos, Jay.
Thank you. No, I was going to say, it's like the kind of like allowing yourself to be honest. It kind of changes from a tool of like survival into like a term of like self-love, I suppose. Instead of like, you know, I used to introduce myself with my pronouns because I was afraid of being misgendered or being perceived as anything other than male. But like now, as I introduce myself with my pronouns, I'm like excited because, you know, the environment, even in just like the past 4 or 5 years, it's changed so much. Like, you know, like adding your pronouns along to just like a basic introductory is just kind of like common etiquette at this point, like especially in the theater community. Like all the emails are signed with pronouns and on resumes it's pronouns. And it's just like an exciting new shift in culture where queerness is being allowed to flourish, and it's allowed to change cultures now, and it's not just a little tool to survive at this point.
Yeah, I can see that, and I think it's great. And you know, I also see that some people are jumping on the bandwagon that are not necessarily, they just want to express themselves differently.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm aware of a number of people who are, I guess, by definition straight, but prefer not to be defined that way.
Mm.
So they're, you know, hopping on some pronouns here and there, and I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. we can work with that. That's mm-hmm. interesting. But I, you know, it's all, I just have to open my head and go, okay, tell me what I need to know. And like, right. you made a comment earlier, Jay, sorry. I have to make sure I direct this. I got three people here. you made a comment earlier, and I just wanted to touch on it briefly. And all I really want you to do is tell me what I need to know.
Sure.
You were making a comment about people asking about, you know, physical changes and things, and that yes. being an invasive thing. Whereas like my natural thought, and I'm sure it's age and everything else, but my natural thought is that if someone is aspiring to be a different gender, that is kind of the goal. So consequently, it would seem almost like a natural question to ask, as opposed to being something that was meant to make somebody uncomfortable. Mm. So my question is, can you help me understand that and what one should say?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, when somebody is trans, it doesn't always necessarily just encompass the standard gender binary of, you know, male and female. So if, you know, like I present very, very masculine, but, and I'm not going to delve into my body just because, you know, it's more, being trans is more about more than just the body, you know. But if somebody decides, if they just wake up one day and they are like, I am a man, then they are, and they could step out in the body that they have and address that they have, and they're still just as much of a man as I am or my dad is, because it's their choice. And it's their body, and it's their expression, you know. And on top of that, you know, different procedures that can be done and hormone replacement therapy. These things are all, for the most part, massively, massively inaccessible. And so for somebody to, as one would say, fully transition, end quote, that's like a full college education worth of money right there. And it's something that, you know, it's beautiful to see. I love, you know, seeing videos of people who get top surgery, which is synonymous with a double mastectomy. And, you know, just seeing the complete glee and joy and happiness on their face. That's something that some people get when they get certain works done. That's because they want to. But there are also some trans men who are perfectly fine with foregoing this because that's just their male body, and that's just as much of a male body as yours or as my dad's. It's kind of all about shaking the idea that being trans means that you're kind of changing yourself to become the ideal version of what people think that gender is. So take Harry Styles, for example. He is cis and he looks fantastic in a dress. And that is something that is traditionally, you know, intended for women to wear. So if a trans man decides to wear a dress, that's just as, you know, empowering of within his own masculinity as it is to this celebrity, you know?
Does that kind of make sense?
Okay, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I learned the most was, I think for a lot of us, that's the biggest hurdle to climb, is to truly understand that. And I think that was really when the light came on for me. And it really, you know, as Jay had just said, and I think for some of us, especially if it's a situation where it could potentially be, you know, one of your children or someone who's close to, you know, the family or a friend or whatever, is just to understand the importance of, or the meaning of, you know, perception, mm-hmm. you know? And you have that's a tough one, especially if it's one of your children. You know, this past weekend we spent some time. We were back in Connecticut. My wife and I live in Miami now, but we were back in Connecticut to do. We had a concert with the band, and my wife was finishing her summer residency at the Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival. Okay. And so we had to, you know, pack everything up and come back down, and we visited with a family friend that I've known literally since birth.
Oh, wow.
And, she went through a very similar thing that I went through with one of her kids. And she said something that was, I think I probably did go through this. I don't know if I allowed myself to experience it, but she said something along the line of when, I think it's the younger of her two children was transitioning. And she actually said, and this woman's a physician, you know, she's been a doctor for, you know, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And she said that she actually had to go through a period of mourning the loss of, you know, the earlier version of her child. And I've been thinking about that ever since she told me that. And I don't know that I went through the same way, because I told myself that it was important for me not to separate. You know, Jay is my child, you know, and regardless, I don't think I looked at it that way. And of course, what you said made, you know, absolute sense. And I understand that. But I had decided that, you know, regardless, you know, getting back to the comment about perception, is Jay being who Jay needs to be. And that's not my decision, you know, that's not a parent's decision. That just for any person, for in any type of life situation, you know, it's like we need to be who we need to be, because at the end of the day, we need to be happy, because we don't know if we're going to be here next week, you know. So we all need to be in the best place that we can be. So, you know, I can say very honestly that I was absolutely terrified about the potential safety of any type of physical changes that were not absolutely 100%, and I was beyond terrified about all of that, and I would never lie about that. But again, this is all based on lack of not only knowledge, because my sister actually has a colleague who had gone through this process, and it was I was scared as a parent, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, holy shit, this is like some pretty serious stuff, you know. But Jay needs to be who Jay is.
Right.
And you know, at the end of the day, that's what it needs to be. But of course, as a parent, you know, we don't just, you know, we worry about the safety and the well-being of our kids. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, so I just wanted to interject that into the conversation.
If I may just say from the child perspective, you know, after the aftershock of everything kind of faded away from like the whole coming out debacle, you noticeably started kind of like ingesting more queer media, whether it be, you know, documentaries or you just like sending me an article on like Facebook or something. But like, it was very obvious that you wanted to understand, but that you also didn't want to kind of like smother me in questions, because obviously, you know, if you're constantly being questions you don't know the answer to, you're not going to be able to figure out what it is for yourself.
And, exactly. And yeah. And you know what, Jay, one of the people that I used to speak to the most about this was Charles at the gym. So when Charles and I would be at the gym at 7 o'clock in the morning, in addition to all of the reading and all the research that I was doing, I needed perspective, you know. And you're absolutely right, Jay. What you are saying is totally true. And, you know, as parents, we want to, you know, I don't know, do our best to try and know as much as we can. But that was a hefty study, you know, and it continues to be for all of us, even for Jay, you know.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
So, you know, we're doing our best to, you know, to try and know what we know. And for me, to try and be as supportive as I can, and I'm not going to pretend that I know everything, because I don't. And if I need an answer, I can ask Jay.
Yes,
but that's the key. It's the communication. It's still there, and the relationship is still there, and that's what's wonderful and refreshing, because so many people lose it in fear. You know,
yes.
There's so much fear either from the child. Based on some level of shame associated with the whole process, or from the parents, same thing. You know, there's the combination of not understanding, not necessarily wanting to understand, not wanting people to know, not.
It's just the fear of rejection is also a big one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And no kid wants that.
Yeah.
You know, every kid. Every kid wants to be loved by their parents. It doesn't matter how awful the parent is. Kids want to be loved by their parents. They just do.
So true. And then also on looking at it from the other side, talking to parents that are so clueless about all of this and are so adamant about not wanting to know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we all know, as the expression goes, you know, you quickly find out who your friends are.
Yes.
Right.
And we don't have time for that crap. You know, it's like if this is something that you don't want to be involved with, then good, we'll catch you at another time. Mm-hmm. We don't have time for that stuff. And I think just with so many of the different things that are happening in life these days, and you know, throughout this whole time that we have experienced this with, you know, Jay's transition, it's like, you know, you very, very quickly start to assess what really, really is important. And of course, as a younger person at the stage that Jay is, you know, Jay has to, you know, is going to have to get a few bumps and bruises like that, you know, those of us that are a bit older, and that, you know, that's part of the ride. But at the same time, you know, you need to be okay with yourself, you know, and we just, it's just like, there's no reason to go through life feeling shameful about yourself and especially in a situation like this, where all of us are trying very hard to understand and to make sure that we can support in a educated way, to make sure we understand what's going on and love and be supportive and just do it the right way, and not be effing around with always having to look over your shoulder all the time. Yeah. Just, life is too short for that.
Of course.
Know? True that. Well, I think it's beautiful. I think you two are a great example of what can be, yes, and hopefully what should be. So I just want to thank you for sharing this.
Well, thank Charles. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure to chat with you. And I hope that our story will, inspire or, maybe shed some light.
Absolutely.
I can't see how I can't. Honestly, you all are great. You really are. But tell me, Jay, tell me truthfully.
Yes.
Which is trickier? Dealing with a dad who's on the road most of the time, or trying to deal with a dad who's trying to adjust to your ever-changing life?
potato, potato. I love it.
Because I know it's funny. People will still ask me, you didn't have any kids. And I was like, well, I grew up with a pretty absentee father. I remember vividly, being in, maybe like seventh grade and some kid talking about his father was getting on his nerves. And I was like, your father's home all the time?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, right. Yours isn't. Yeah. And I was like, I just thought it was. I don't know. It was like the most natural thing to me that he came when he came. Mm-hmm. I was so adamant that I did not want to put any kid through that I was like, I'll just wing it. I have such respect for people who have managed to have these traveling careers and sustain strong relationships with their family members. I think it's brilliant. And it's a lot of work. It's hard.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
It's fun though. Like I actually got to see the bodyguard one time out. I think it was in Tucson. And
okay.
Yeah, that was actually when I committed to school. I like came so that I could see the show and that we could do all the school paperwork. But the him being on the road never really was, it didn't feel like, distance or absence per se. It was just like another opportunity to like see him in a different environment. You know what nice. I mean? So it was never a bad experience. I've got to see many, many beautiful places like thanks to his career. So
excellent. That extended honeymoon is a good thing sometimes.
Honeymoon for Jay, maybe not for us, Charles.
Exactly. That's all I'm always saying when Paul comes out. It's like, okay, you're on vacation. I'm working.
Yes.
So you have a good time and leave me alone so I can take a nap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. I really, really appreciate it.
Of course, thank you as well, too.
Of course. You guys were beautiful. I was honestly just taken aback. Sometimes there are just things I want to say, but I just loved the chemistry you guys have together and the overwhelming amount of support, Joe, that you have for Jay. It's something I think every child dreams of. So you guys have an amazing dynamic, and it definitely put a smile on my face. So I was just kind of sitting back and taking it all in. I'm sorry I didn't have more words. I was just kind of, I've been smiling the whole time. And I'm not a smiler. So I really appreciate it.
I'm not either, Portia.
Awesome.
I love it.
Awesome.
All right, everybody.
All right.
Have a great night.
Have a wonderful evening. So have a good weekend, y'all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Conscious Compassion. We'd love to hear your input and to hear what you do to make it through.
You can reach us on our website at consciouscompassion.net. We've got more amazing interviews coming up that we can't wait for you to hear.
Until then, catch you next time. I'm Charles Gray.
And I'm Portia Flores.
Conscious Compassion.
Where sharing is caring.